Martin can introduce a license to a third party. Taking title can remove ownership from the funding recipient or its licensees. Taking title can create a freedom to operate problem.
Welcome to IP Talk with Wolf Greenfield. Rob Saar is a shareholder in Wolf Greenfield's biotechnology practice. He develops strategies for life science companies to maximize exclusivity for therapeutic and diagnostic products. Rob has also assisted federal grant recipients and contractors with Bayh-Dole compliance. Originally passed at the end of 1980, the Bayh-Dole Act permits ownership by contractors of inventions arising from federal government-funded research. In recent months, the Biden administration has seemed intent on more aggressively exercising march-in rights under the Act to promote affordability of taxpayer-funded inventions. Rob, has Bayh-Dole always been so contentious, or is this a relatively recent development?
It heats up from time to time. There have been a handful of highly publicized requests for NIH to march in over the last 20 years, and those generate a buzz. Now, just last year, NIH declined a march-in request over Xtandi, a treatment for prostate cancer. Prominent argument in the request related to the high price of the drug. A draft framework for the exercise of march-in rights was set forth by NIST at the end of last year. The White House touted that as a means to lower prescription drug costs for American families. That caused a bit of a stir. Some prior proposed regulations referred to not including price as a sole factor. Ultimately, those regulations were not finalized. The new proposed framework in December of last year specifically includes price as a factor, but it's merely one of several factors. I think the rhetoric has been amplified regarding price and march-in. In my view, a more substantial shift is in the executive order of July 2023. That executive order urged agencies to consider exceptional circumstances in order to tighten the strings attached to federally funded inventions. Most prominent in that is the U.S. manufacturing requirement under 35 U.S.C. 204, which says that an exclusive license cannot be granted to use or sell in the United States unless products are manufactured substantially in the United States. The executive order urged agencies under exceptional circumstances to put language in new awards that products sold anywhere in the world be subject to U.S. manufacture. Moreover, the executive order put some teeth into the government's ability to track manufacturing. It required all agencies to require annual utilization reports, specifically requesting information on the location at which products are manufactured.
Let's talk a little bit about subject inventions. What are they and why are they the source of so much confusion?
A subject invention is an invention that is conceived or first actually reduced to practice in the performance of work under a federally funded agreement. So conceived, that's when an inventor thinks of it. It's a concrete, definite idea such that one of skill in the art could understand it. Conception has been defined in different ways, but patent attorneys get it. We know what that is. The other prong, actual reduction to practice, that's really been a source of confusion regarding Bayh-Dole. Under patent law, there are two types of reduction to practice: constructive reduction to practice and actual reduction to practice. And these were set forth in the days of interferences. There's quite a bit of law on it, but there's a particular meaning in patent law. Constructive reduction to practice can be achieved by filing a patent application that describes and enables an invention. Actual reduction to practice requires much more. That's when an invention is made and the inventor appreciates that it works for its intended purpose. So a first actual reduction to practice requires the making of something or doing something, if it's a process, and appreciating that it works. It might require testing. Fusion is around actual reduction to practice. I have observed funding recipients mistakenly believing that filing a patent application prior to working on the federally funded project will prevent an invention described in that application from becoming a subject invention. There's a failure to appreciate that actual reduction to practice can and does often occur later than the filing of a patent application.
Let's talk a little bit about march-in rights and how are they different from taking title?
In essence, Marchand rights provide the U.S. government a way to grant a third party a license to patents covering a subject invention. Funding recipients might be forced to license to a competitor, or the government can actually provide that license. Taking title refers to the government's ability to take title to a patent that covers a subject invention. Primarily, this right emerges when there has been a failure by the funding recipient to timely disclose an invention to the agency that provided the funding, or failure to timely elect title. According to Bayh-Dole regulations, the part that refers to minimum rights held by the funding recipient when the government requests title, if there was a failure to timely disclose the invention to the government agency and the government takes title, then the funding recipient does not even retain a license. So to summarize the major difference between Marchand and taking title, Marchand can introduce a license to a third party. Taking title can remove ownership from the funding recipient or its licensees. Taking title can create a freedom to operate problem.
So if we talk about Marchand rights, there are four requirements. What are they?
They're straight out of the statute. The first three, no practical application of the invention or no plans for practical application, health and safety needs are not being met, or there's a federal regulation that requires use that is not satisfied by the funding recipient. Those are the first three. The fourth one is sort of a standalone. The fourth one is a violation of the U.S. manufacturing requirement. So the first three sort of relate to needs that aren't being met. And the fourth one is on its own. It's really something that's required by statute and is not being complied with respect to manufacture.
When it comes to disclosure, can you define what timely disclosure is and why it's so important?
Sure. Unless a funding agreement provides otherwise, the default under Bayh-Dole regulations is that once a person responsible for IP matters at a funding recipient entity, once that person responsible for IP matters learns of an invention from an inventor, that responsible IP person has 2 months to disclose the invention to the government agency. And that disclosure, that must be done in writing. It's a document that describes the invention, provides additional required information as well. And for most agencies that use iEdison, that includes uploading the disclosure to iEdison. And when that's done, it's a matter of self-reporting as to what is the date that the IP person learned of the invention from the inventor. There's a requirement that inventors tell the IP person. That time period is not defined. The time period for an inventor to tell somebody, the responsible IP person, is promptly, and funding recipients are required to have in writing an agreement with inventors that they will promptly tell somebody responsible for intellectual property about an invention. But once that happens, that's the trigger for the 2 months for the person responsible for IP matters to tell the government agency that there has been an invention.
There was recently an interesting case involving the University of South Florida. What was the case about? Why is it newsworthy?
Yeah, that one just was issued by the Federal Circuit this year, and it serves as a reminder that the scope of subject inventions is often broader than people appreciate. It talked about constructive and actual reduction to practice. In the South Florida case, there was an actual reduction to practice of an invention that brought it under the purview of Bayh-Dole. That's what the dispute was about. The case was a bit unusual in that the actual reduction to practice occurred before the university received money, but federal funds were used to reimburse money spent on the activity leading to an actual reduction to practice. Earlier, I mentioned that filing a patent application, constructive reduction to practice, before using funds would not foreclose the opportunity for an invention to become a subject invention. In this case, an actual reduction to practice occurred before the distribution of funds, but because the funds were then applied to it retroactively, the Federal Circuit determined that it was a subject invention. Now, it wasn't a Marchand. It was just the government exercising its right to have the invention practiced by the government or on its behalf. So it just serves as a reminder, again, that the scope of a subject invention is often broader than people appreciate. In this case, it was an actual reduction to practice prior to receiving funding, but because the funds were designated to reimburse that activity, the courts determined that it brought it under the purview of Bayh-Dole.
Last July, the Biden administration issued an executive order changing the requirements around utilization reports, and that was followed in December by a draft framework for the exercise of march-in rights, which we've talked about here on this podcast. What do you expect the administration to do here in 2024? And of course, we have a presidential election coming up this fall. How's that going to potentially factor into the equation?
I suspect that the government is looking to flex its muscle regarding march-in on an entity that is selling products in the United States without substantially manufacturing in the United States. I would expect they're going to go after somebody that is not complying with the U.S. manufacturing requirement, someone who's not a very sympathetic target, a company that could be promoting American jobs and American-made products in the supply chain, but is not. Instead is sending those abroad in sort of an objective violation of the statute, which is clear, saying this alone substantiates march-in. I think that's the target that the government is eyeing. And again, it's not going to be one that's going to garner sympathy from the public. Regarding an upcoming presidential election, I don't know if it'll happen before or after. I will note that both Democratic and the prior Republican administration were very keen about U.S. manufacture and American jobs. So I think either way, regardless of if there's a change in administrations, this is going to be something that is likely pursued by the federal government.
Our thanks to Rob Saar for joining us here on this edition of IP Talk with Wolf Greenfield. We hope you'll subscribe to our series of conversations related to IP matters on Apple, Google, Amazon, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information on legal matters related to IP, we invite you to visit our website, www.wolfgreenfield.com. Thanks again for joining us on this edition of IP Talk with Wolf Greenfield.